when people talk about singlehood and the first thing people say is like, just focus on you and the right person will come. And now you have all of these people that have spent lifetimes working on themselves, doing the internal work, you know, really building these rich inner lives, focusing on friendships, career, all these other things. And they're like, well, I was told if I did all of this, that I would find someone. And it's like, well, they lied to you. They unfortunately lied to you. Unfortunately, you were deserving of love all along, not only once you had self-optimized. Ah, God damn it. What the hell?
Dude, where are you? Pick up your phone. I'm going to a summer party tonight, and you're obviously invited, so call me back.
Okay, love you.
What's up, you guys, and welcome back to Emotionally Online, the weekly slumber party for spilling guts and sharing secrets, hosted by yours truly, the one and only Maddie Drosbeck, powered by the one and only Lover Girls HQ, the many and only members of Lover Girls HQ, the Patreon. I want to start this episode with giving a special shout out to my patrons, with which this show would not be possible. And also a call in to anyone who has yet to join the Patreon, because I have recently added a brand new perk for the sensitive and romantic tiers. And that perk is a poetry print snail mail club. Basically, every other month, I'm going to be sending out a 5x7 art print with a poem that I've written on one side and a piece of photography or art that I've created on the other, to everyone in my sensitive and romantic tiers. So if you're interested in joining a little snail mail club, on top of getting bonus episodes, extra videos, live streams, and of course access to our Discord community, joining the Lover Girls HQ Patreon could very much be for you. I've been having so much fun doing my snail mail club. I'm preparing to send out the first batch for November. The deadline to join the snail mail club to receive November's print is November 5th. So if you'd like to receive the print, you have to become a patron by November 5th. And then from here on out, it will be the first of every other month. So if you want to receive January's print, you have to be a member by January 1st. March's, March 1st, so on and so forth, every other month. But as expected, poetry has been really such a healer to me recently, and probably unexpectedly, but other forms of art and using my hands have been also kind of therapeutic for me. I mentioned in last week's episode that I'm really not much of a drawer, a painter, if you will. But I've actually become quite fascinated with the world of fine arts over the last couple weeks since I did my Mango Portrait Day party, because of how much fun I had. So I got a watercolor notebook and I've been practicing painting, and I'm doing another little portrait of Mango to put in the glass photo case that I have attached to her ashes, because I have not put a photo in there yet. It's been on my to-do list. And I was like, you know what? Even better than printing off a photo is honing in on my art skills and trying to produce my own portrait of Mango that's even better than the first go that I did for the portrait party, but even royal and regal enough to be on the front of her ashes. So listen, I'm giving it a go. I'm having fun. I'm using my hands. I'm getting crafty. We're trying. We are doing what we can. Grief check-in for all my grievers out there. I am showing up to this week's episode after what has been kind of an exhausting week for me. And you know what's crazy? As I was listening to the Lover Girls Worldwide playlist yesterday in a car home from Restaurant Roulette with my friends, and Vanilla Twilight by Owl City came on shuffle, a song that I love and that I have routinely screamed throughout the walls of this apartment and all of my former apartments. I love that goddamn song. Vanilla Twilight by Owl City, underrated banger. But as I was listening to it, it came on shuffle, and I, you know, the song takes on a new meaning to me now, where I'm listening to the lyrics, The stars lean down to kiss you, and I lie awake and miss you. Pour me a heavy dose of atmosphere, because I'll doze off safe and soundly, but I'll miss your arms around me. I'd send a postcard to you, dear, because I wish you were here. And now, as I'm listening to this song that I've loved throughout so many years of my life, it feels so completely like a song about my grief and about missing Mango. And I, when I got to the postcard line, I got full body chills as I was listening to it, because what have I been calling the snail mail poetry art print club that I've now added to the Patreon? Postcards to Mango. That's literally what I'm doing. Sending postcards to her through all of you. I'll find repose in new ways, though I haven't slept in 2 days, because cold nostalgia chills me to the bone. But drenched in vanilla twilight, I'll sit on the front porch all night, waist deep in thought, because when I think of you, I don't feel so alone. I'm sitting in the back of this Uber and I'm crying. And then by the time we get to the big crescendo of the song, when violet eyes get brighter and heavy wings grow lighter, I'll taste the sky and feel alive again. And I'll forget the world that I knew, but I swear I won't forget you. Oh, if my voice could reach back through the past, I'd whisper in your ear, oh, darling, I wish you were here. Oh, I'm going to cry just now just talking about it. My grief has just been coming up and hitting me like a truck recently, and I feel like maybe it's just because as time is going on, I'm able to go longer stretches of time without crying and feeling okay. But because I'm going longer stretches of time without crying, and by longer stretches of time, I mean, you know, we're maybe hitting the 48-hour mark, kind of big for me. But because I'm hitting the 48-hour mark, when it does hit, it's almost like I have this like shock factor of like, oh my god, and everything washes over me again. And you know, then I'm out to dinner with my family and we're in a Boa Steakhouse, because I did go to LA this past weekend. And then I'm crying in this nice steakhouse. And I can't stop. And even if I'm emotionally pulled together, tears are just rolling from my eyes. Like I can't hold it in. I can't stop it. And what can you really do when you're crying in a steakhouse? Try to hide to the best of your ability that you're crying in a nice restaurant. So then you start using the sleeve of your sweater to try to wipe your eyes. But because the water just keeps coming and you keep wiping, now the skin around your eyes is all irritated and you maybe look even worse than if you just let yourself cry. The thing is, though, I'm no stranger to crying in public, nor am I a stranger to crying in restaurants. But it is kind of a uniquely vulnerable thing to have a direct eye contact interaction with a stranger when you know you look like you've been crying. Like, it's one thing to cry on the subway or on the bus or at a park and like people might pass by me, but it's not like I have to communicate with any of them. It's like they're witnessing me, but we are not eye to eye connecting with each other and having to communicate, right? When you cry at a restaurant and then you still have to place your order and you're like, okay, I'm done crying, but I definitely like, you know that I've been crying. I know that I've been crying. Me and this waitress are making eye contact with each other. And I'm like, I know that you know that I'm unwell. Okay, I know. We all know. And now I have to order a Diet Coke and a margarita and act like I'm fine. That feels incredibly vulnerable. Have I done it many times in my life? Yes, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. The kind of deep intimacy I have shared with wait staff that have spoken to me when it is very evident that I've been crying is high. And then the other demographic of people that have interacted with me when I'm crying, strangers that have interacted with me when I'm crying, are like very sweet older women who just want to give me a little ounce of joy or something to brighten my day. Like, I remember this one time I was on a flight and it was the worst flight I have ever been on. I was on a flight that attempted to land multiple times and couldn't. And so I was flying back from a cruise with my family. I was by myself on the plane, though. They were flying back to Boston. I was flying back to New York. I had a connecting flight in Chicago. When we got to the Chicago airport, the plane is descending. We're getting so close to the ground. You can like see the runway. You look like you are about to land in like 5-10 seconds. right when we get super close to the ground, the plane shoots back up into the sky, which freaked me out because I had never been on a flight where that happened before. But the people around me were being relatively calm about it. So I was like, okay, maybe this is normal. And the pilot's like, oh, it's a little windy. Like, we're going to fly around and give it a second try. So they fly around and give it a second try, and the same thing happens. So I'm starting to panic at this point, where I'm like, the pilot can't fly the plane. The pilot cannot land this plane. I'm stuck on the plane, and things are very windy. The plane is like moving around a lot. Now people are starting to freak out, and that was freaking me out. The whole situation was just very stressful. They proceeded to try to land two more times, both unsuccessfully. At some point during this whole extravaganza, I started crying because I was so scared. And I was sitting in the middle seat, and the woman that was in the window noticed that I was getting upset and crying. And she turns to me and she's like, did you just get off of the Norwegian Cruise Line cruise? And I was like, yeah, I did. And she told me that she was on one of the excursions with me and my family members. And we were a real hoot. She loved how much fun we were having. Now, real Drosbeck family lore collectors will remember the video of me thinking there was a monkey on my back. Okay? Here, you know what? Let's bring the video to the function. Here is the video of me drunk thinking that there is a monkey on my back.
What the hell? I think there's a monkey on my back.
It's on my friend.
Monkey on my back.
We got a picture.
I got, no, there's a monkey on my back. No! Monkey, I think he loves me.
There's no monkey on your back, you freaking.
So the woman sitting next to me is like, I was on the cruise with you and your family. We did an excursion together. You guys were a real hoot. And I'm, you know, sitting there having a panic attack, now realizing that this woman has seen me blackout drunk. That day, I've never in my life been as drunk as I was that day. And that's what happens when you're out in the sun all day slamming rum punches and then switch to beer. Why? I don't know. I couldn't tell you. Okay. I was 21. Life was different then. You guys, I'm 28 now. All right. Many a year has passed. But really imagine this. I need you to put yourself in my position. You're on this flight. You think that you're going to die. You're not going to make it. And the woman next to you is like, yeah, you and your family were a real hoot. And I'm putting together pieces in my head. I'm like, you've seen me at my lowest point. You've seen me at my lowest moment where I am blackout drunk in the fucking Caribbean thinking there's a monkey on my back when there's not. It's literally my backpack. I'm wearing a backpack and I'm like, I think there's a monkey on my back. Meanwhile, this woman was on that boat with us. My sister and I found that guy with the monkey right after we got off the boat that this woman allegedly was also on that said we were a real hoot on. If only I could remember it, lady. So now my last memories as I'm going down in this airplane, I think, is this woman next to me has now intimately seen me cry and also seen me blackout drunk. Like, you might as well have seen me naked. This is the worst situation possible. I was so vulnerable. Anyways, the flight ended up diverting. We landed in Wisconsin instead, and then I had to sleep on the floor of the airport and then fly out again the next morning. It was a nightmare. It was an actual mess. But I think the intimacy I shared with that woman next to me on the plane is comparable to the intimacy I've shared with wait staff that have noticed that I am holding back tears in a restaurant. There's something different about that. It's one thing to cry in public. It's another thing to cry in public and have an interaction with a stranger during those moments. That is a level of intimacy that is sometimes even too much for me. It's often even too much for me. All right, I have a question to bring to the sleepover. I need to hear your opinions on this because I've been thinking about this quite a bit and I feel myself becoming more passionate about this, but I need to hear what you guys are thinking. So, Find My Friends, an application on your phone that allows you to store the locations of your loved ones. I Emma Find My Friends user. Me and my besties all have each other's locations. Me and my family members also have each other's locations. I do find it to be helpful for safety reasons. If I'm going somewhere by myself, when I've traveled places by myself, I like that my friends can see where my location is. I feel like my most common use cases of Find My Friends are if I'm going to a bar or a restaurant or a movie with my friends and I arrive first and I want to see how close everyone is to arriving, or if I want to call or FaceTime one of my long distance friends and I want to see if they're home or if they're still at work before I call them. Those are really the only two reasons that I would use Find My Friends for, outside of like emergencies and wanting to check on my friends if they're hanging out with strangers or going on dates or whatever. Now, I do think there's a fine line in using the Find My Friends application where it's all just like utility or for safety, but it really is just a tiny little tiptoe over to like crossing boundaries and really invading someone else's privacy. And also knowing things that you shouldn't necessarily know. I think that Find My Friends sometimes is the catalyst for hurt feelings that don't have to be hurt. You notice two of your friends hanging out on Find My Friends without you. They're allowed to do that. In every other stretch of time in history, people can hang out one-on-one without needing to invite a whole group of people to hang out every single time, and you would literally never know that they hung out. But because of Find My Friends, people see their friends hang out without them, and they get really upset about it. It causes unnecessary beef. Though I understand why someone might feel left out, that's a really normal reaction or feeling to feel. I also don't think that people are required to invite their friends to every single occasion that happens. And ultimately, it's not a learning that I think you should take to heart or allow to work yourself up too much, because people are allowed to hang out without you. It doesn't have to mean anything. And in every other stretch of time in history, you would have no way of knowing if your friends hung out without you. Usually it's not malicious. Maybe it is. Usually it isn't. And I think that sometimes people just use Find My Friends as kind of like a form of self-harm to nitpick their relationships and internalize or take things personally that never needed to be taken personally at all. I've witnessed that. I've personally experienced people having weird relationships with Find My Friends, tracking me, getting mad about something that I did because of that, that made me really uncomfortable. But because that's not something that personally impacts me, like if I open Find My Friends and see my friends hanging out without me, my reaction is always like, oh, that's so fun. I love that my friends are also friends with each other. Like, I am not someone who's going to get jealous like that. Because it does not bother me in that way, I have been fine continuing to use Find My Friends as necessary with other people who also feel comfortable using Find My Friends as is necessary. However, I saw something the other day where people were talking about how Find My Friends is really the death of surprises. And I think that this is actually the thing that you could sell me on and be like, we have to stop giving people our locations because surprises are so necessary and kind of like a fun, whimsical part of community that maybe we are losing touch with. And honestly, there have been very few times in my life that I've been surprised. Mostly because I know everything. Mostly because I'm clocked in, okay? I think it is harder to surprise me. I think that I've been surprised by little things before. I did a live podcast show with Sebastian and Robbie a couple years ago. And I posted about it because it was a live show that they were doing and you guys could buy tickets to it. So I posted about it when we did it, but I didn't ask any of my friends to come to it. It wasn't like a big moment that I needed people to show up for. I just was, you know, promoting on Instagram as usual for Sebastian and Robbie. And then when I got there and Sebastian and Robbie were on stage before they had introduced me, I was standing in the wings and I peek through the curtain and I make direct eye contact with some of my friends. And I was like, what are they doing here? And there was like six of them sitting at a table right in the front. That was genuinely surprising to me. I had no idea that they were coming. And I had all of their locations on Find My Friends. I just didn't look that day because I was busy and I wasn't planning on hanging out with any of them. And so it didn't occur to me. That was a successful surprise on their part. But that's one of the only times in recent memory that I can remember being surprised for something like that, for surprised by someone's presence versus like, you know, a tiny surprise, someone bringing me a cookie or a 12 pack of Diet Coke or a bouquet of flowers or, you know, something thoughtful like that, that I would no way of knowing or predicting, more like the surprise of someone's presence. I think that's the only time that that's happened to me in recent memory. I do love a surprise. I wish it wasn't as difficult to surprise me. I think that someday I would love to be surprised. Planting seeds, people, we're putting it out there. I would love to be surprised someday. But like, if I wanted to go fly to LA to surprise my sister, to surprise Luke, it's going to be pretty hard to do that. Because if all of a sudden I just show up on Find My Friends and they're like, what the fuck are you doing here? And why didn't you tell me about it? They're going to know that I came here for a reason. I can't just be like, oh yeah, my man, I forgot to tell you this thing. I forgot to tell you I'm flying to LA for this thing that I have going on. I'm only going to be here for 24 hours. I didn't even think to tell you. Like, obviously I would have told my siblings if I was going to LA. Even if I couldn't see them, I would tell them. But like, Find My Friends really does blow your cover in a major way. And even if you turn off your location temporarily, like, people know what you're doing. You know what I mean? I know what you're doing. I know what you're doing. So it's like, should we just be getting off Find My Friends so that we can maintain the beauty of a surprise? Are surprises that important to friendship and community and adding a little bit of whimsy in our lives that it is critical that we override the need to be constantly connected and in the loop of where people are? I do think there is a purpose safety-wise. So then it's like, maybe we just send it to people when they need our location. I'm also not saying I'm reversing all of the indefinite shares that I have allocated to my friends on my own Find My Friends. Like, I'm not going to be retracting anytime soon, I don't think. But you could convince me. I feel that I have a very moldable brain on this subject right now. I could be convinced to totally deactivate and take away my location from all my Find My Friends. And honestly, I might get there anyways. I really, truly might. I have been in uncomfortable situations before where people have tracked me on Find My Friends and then gotten mad at me for things because of what they witnessed on Find My Friends. And that was really uncomfortable to me. I don't like feeling like I'm being watched or surveilled, or that, you know, people could be nitpicking me or getting upset by something I'm doing when I'm not even face to face with them. I also don't want people that I love to feel badly about that. If they see me hanging out with someone and they weren't invited, like, it is literally never deep like that. Sometimes you just need a one-on-one hang. Sometimes it's just not about the big group of it all. Sometimes it is about keeping it smaller and nourishing those one-on-one relationships. I don't need anybody to be watching me and surveilling me and getting upset because they weren't invited to something. I don't need that for me. I also don't need that for you. It's just messy all around. Now, I do think that most adults, that's not going to be an issue. But then we get to the point of surprises and it's like, well, maybe as an adult, I do need a surprise every now and then. You know what I mean? And how is anyone going to do that? How is anyone going to do that when we're so hyper connected all the time? Someone needs to break my phone. Make me believe that Find My Friends is broken. Okay, there's something. There's something. Now we're cooking with gas. Make me believe that there's something wrong with the whole system. Nobody's Find My Friend is working. It's not even just you, sister. Anyways, that's my question for you guys. Is Find My Friends the death of surprises? And what is really your take on Find My Friends, surveillance culture, and being so interconnected with the people in your life? Do you use Find My Friends? Do you use location sharing? If you do, how do you feel about it? If you don't, why don't you use it? Okay? I'm interested to hear your thoughts. And like I said, I have a very moldable brain about this subject. I could go any which way. So you better get those argumentative essays going in the comments, because you might be able to convert me. Listen, Listen, I am open to believing. I am looking for someone to follow. Guide me, okay? Lead me not into temptation. Deliver us from evil. Amen. Amen. Let's jump into some of these audience submissions. If you don't know, we've got a submission box for the show where you can submit anything and everything to the sleepover. Bring me your secrets. Bring me your advice requests. Bring me your am I the assholes. Bring me whatever pop culture topic you think really needs to be discussed today. We're here to gossip. We're here to have a heart to heart. We're here to spill guts and share secrets, people, okay? It all goes back to what I said at the beginning of the show. So if you have not yet gotten into that submission box, now's your time. You have been truly and deeply invited to. Hey, Maddie, listening to last week's podcast about friends and loyalty really brought up this idea of guilt I have about past friendships. 2 to 3 years ago, I found myself calling it quits with people I was friends with, but I catch myself seeing them in all parts of my life. We were friends for 10 years. And I feel guilty that maybe I didn't give them enough of a chance. Maybe I'm not loyal enough, but also I know I would never treat my friends the way they treated me. Ignoring boundaries, unapologetically hurting others, literal bullying. So I'm kind of stuck between these two wolves as I still haven't found other people who get me like they did. I hope this all makes sense. Sleepover thoughts, I suppose. Thank you for reading this. I love your work so much and it's really helped me through these times, reminding me of the kind of friend I want to show up as. Many, many things can be true at once. And I don't know exactly what your situation is with these people, what the specifics of the things that happened were, but taking what you said at face value here, ignoring boundaries, unapologetically hurting others, and literal bullying, those don't sound like people that you really want to have in your inner circle. However, it makes total sense that if you are feeling lonelier, that you have a real longing for community and you just haven't found close relationships to sort of take the place that those ones used to fill yet, it makes total sense that you would have moments of looking back on those relationships and missing the kind of connection you had in the good moments, and wondering if you made the right call cutting off those friendships, because the good times were good. And I think when we have nothing else to compare it to, when we have nothing new in our lives, it is much easier to look back on those past relationships and be like, oh, maybe I do miss them. Maybe I do still wish we were friends. But I feel like when you have better friendships in your life, when you find new people, when you build new connections that feel equally as fruitful and close and rewarding, it becomes harder to look back on those relationships and be like, oh, did I make the wrong decision? Do I miss this person? Because you have actually good friends that don't bully you and cross boundaries and disrespect you to compare it to. And at that point, it starts to be like, well, why would I ever want to endure that again? Because now I know what a really great, comfortable, stress-free friendship can look like. And it's not like that. But I think when you're in this like transition phase where you've had a friendship breakup, but you haven't necessarily built those kind of long-term connections yet, understandably, you were friends with them for 10 years. It's only been 2 to 3 years since you called it quits with those friendships. That's a different kind of thing, right? Ending 10-year-long friendships, it's going to take a minute to find relationships with people that can span the test of time, have depth, and that actually are better for you than those people were. It makes total sense to me why you would look back at that time before finding your new people and be like, did I do the right thing? But, you know, taking what you said at face value, ignoring boundaries, unapologetically hurting others, and literal bullying, it sounds like you did make the right call, because we don't want to be friends with literal bullies. Based on what you've said, that would be my answer. But I'll also hit it from the other perspective here in saying that if you go through a friendship breakup with someone, or distance is between you for some reason, and time passes and you look back on that friendship ending and you think to yourself, I might have made a mistake. I don't know if I totally stand behind the reasons why that friendship ended now, that is also okay. And this is something that I've been through before. Lots of friendship breakups partings can look different. I've had more direct friendship breakups when it was a very clear conversational ending, split parting of ways. And during those situations, I feel really clear on why the friendship is ending, why it's no longer working, why I need to walk away and put distance between myself and this person. And to me, a friendship ending is like a final resort. If I am having a conversation with someone about needing space, needing to go our separate ways, not be friends anymore, that to me means that I have exhausted all my other options and I've tried everything possible to try to make this friendship work and it's just not anymore. There have also been times in my life where I haven't had necessarily like a friendship break up conversation with someone, but rather there was a fight or some conflict, inciting incident that we just never quite recovered from. And there's one friend that I think of when I think of like friendship endings that I do regret. There's one friend that always comes to mind for me because I look back on how I handled that time. Our friendship ended because of a miscommunication, really. And in the wake of that miscommunication, I think both of us got uncomfortable and didn't really know how to move forward. And I look back on that time and I feel a lot of deep regret for the ways I let my ego control how I moved forward in that situation. At the time, I think I let this misunderstanding upset me to the point where it almost felt like an ego thing to me. My ego was bruised. I felt misunderstood. I felt hurt. I didn't want to be the first one to reach out and try to patch things up. And now I look back on that time and I really, really regret it and wish that I behaved differently. I wish that I put in more effort to patching things up because it really was just like a silly misunderstanding. They were always a great friend to me and I miss them a lot. I still do. And I've thought about that moment a lot in the years since it's happened because I don't know. I think it was something I had to learn that I had to live through. I had to go through this period where a friendship fizzled out. And I did live to regret it and realize that it was my ego trying to protect myself rather than, you know, choosing to be vulnerable and fix things. I think it was something I just had to live through and learn. Like if I went back in time and I could look at my younger self and shake my shoulders and be like, do not let this friendship go. Like, this is a friendship that's worth fighting for. Figure it out. Work it out. Like, conflict is fine. Misunderstanding is fine. Do not let this misunderstanding bruise your ego to the point where you do not put in effort to fixing this relationship. Even if I could go back in time and say that to my younger self, I don't know that it would have impacted me at the time. I think that it really was something that I had to live through and that I had to feel that regret myself, that I had to know it intimately, that I made the wrong choice. And I do know it intimately now. Life is long and winding. You can fuck up. You can make mistakes. You can choose to accept that you've made that mistake and you ended a friendship prematurely. And you can also go back and try to see if the door is able to be reopened. I don't think there's anything wrong with reaching out to someone to try to patch things up if you feel regret in that way, in the way that I do. It doesn't sound like you feel that way, but I did want to add that in there just in case this could have maybe been a situation where at the time you felt one way and now you look back and feel differently. Because I've been there also. And it's okay to change your perspective, to change your opinions, and to decide that you regret the way that you perceived something and the way that you acted and that you want to try to give things a second chance. I don't think there's anything wrong with that as long as you feel clear on that and aligned with it. But based on what you wrote, I'm going to assume that's not the case. But to anyone out there who maybe is going through something similar, I understand it can be hard to kind of swallow your ego, swallow your pride, and say, I fucked up and I handled that badly and I would love another chance if you're open to it. I also think that it could be a worthwhile thing to do if it's really heavy on your heart like that. And this is my advice to me as well. Maybe I'll start taking my own advice. Sheesh. Hi, Maddie. I, like everyone else on planet Earth at the moment, am really struggling with dating. I only started dating at 25. I did a lot of work on myself in my early 20s and made sure I had a good, solid foundation of self-esteem and friendships around me. I went into dating with a positive mindset. However, 2 years later, I've still not met anyone. I've never been in a relationship, never had sex, and only been kissed once, which I do feel like holds me back a little bit. There are guys who I've dated that have wanted to get into a relationship with me, but wasn't the energy that I wanted or deserved. Looking back on guys I've rejected, I have no regrets. They weren't right for me, and friends I've discussed it with have said if your gut says it's a no, it's a no. But I feel like maybe those guys are the only type of guys that would be interested in me. How do you proceed when you know what you deserve, but you're just not seeing it come back to you? I feel like this is something, this is like a mistake or a misconception that so many people have about dating. And it is the idea that you can be the most healed, self-optimized, ready to date version of yourself possible and still not find the right person for you. And I blame this so intensely on the amount of people that, like, whenever somebody would say that they've, you know, they've never been in a relationship, they haven't found their person yet, or when people talk about singlehood and the first thing people say is like, just focus on you and the right person will come. And now you have all of these people that have spent lifetimes working on themselves, doing the internal work, you know, really building these rich inner lives, focusing on friendships, career, all these other things. And they're like, well, I was told if I did all of this that I would find someone. And it's like, well, they lied to you. They unfortunately lied to you. Unfortunately, you were deserving of love all along, not only once you had self-optimized. Ah, God damn it. What the hell? And it's so funny that, I mean, I've definitely said this before, but when people go into the spirals of like, just focus on you, love yourself, and love will find you. And it's like, the people who find love in this lifetime are not exclusively people that have like self-optimized to a major extent. There are plenty of emotionally stunted people in relationships. There is no amount of like self-optimization and healing that unlocks a level of love that you wouldn't have access to otherwise. It's just silly. Okay. But fine. You do all the healing work. You know, you build a life around yourself, good, solid foundation of self-esteem and friendships. You're like, boom, now it's time for love. And you still don't find it. And that is because so much of dating, and many people don't want to admit this, but so much of dating comes down to luck. It is luck at the end of the fucking day. It's meeting the right person at the right time in the right set of circumstances. You can be the most brilliant, smart, healed, funny, kind, well-socialized, emotionally intelligent person on earth. And if you don't come across the right person for you, then none of it matters, right? And also, maybe you feel this to be true. I know that I feel this to be true. But the older that I've gotten, the clearer that I've gotten on what I want, and the richer my individual life has gotten, the more challenging dating has become. And that's because at this point, I really enjoy the life that I've built for myself. And to bring someone into it, they just have to be a very special person. They have to be the right person. When you are comfortable being alone because you love and enjoy the life you have built for yourself, you are more comfortable rejecting people that aren't the right fit for you because you're okay with being alone. And therefore, you will probably be single for longer stretches of time than people who aren't, unless you hit some random stroke of luck. So how do you proceed when you know what you deserve, but you're just not seeing it come back to you? Accept that this is part of the dating process. You know what you want. You know how you feel. Now you just got to go out and live your life and let time and fate and luck do its thing. There's no amount of shortcuts or self-optimization focus that we can hone in on that will override the impact of luck in all of this. I know that lots of people would like to believe that the reason why they are in relationships and other people aren't is because they have cracked some type of code. They have healed, they love themselves. And if only you just loved yourself, if you just focus on loving you and then somebody else will love you. It's like people love the idea of like the second you love yourself, someone else will love you. And it's like, that is just not true. It's not true. That's not how it works. Luck plays a major factor here. I've always found it so like, it irks me when people are like, you just got to focus on loving yourself. And it's like, baby, I've been focused on loving myself for 28 years. Put a sock in it. Like, actually put a sock in it. Have you considered focusing on loving yourself? Like, I've had enough. And I just think at the end of the day, it comes down to luck. And the closer you get to yourself, the closer you get to living your dream life, yeah, the more selective you're going to be with the people that you want to be around. And, you know, when you say at the end, I feel like maybe those guys are the only type of guys that would be interested in me. Okay, so let's imagine they're not, but let's imagine this, you know, fairy tale world where these guys that you're going out with that you don't really like are the only guys on the whole face of the planet that like you. Would you rather settle to be with a bozo or be alone? Riddle me this. Would you rather settle to be with a bozo, assuming the bozos are the only people that want you, or just be by yourself and with your friends and happy? Personally, I would choose being alone over being with a bozo, assuming that only bozos were attracted to me, which we know isn't true. But I don't know. Maybe you would rather choose to be with a bozo instead of being alone. I wouldn't recommend that to anybody. But this is also existing within a fairy tale world where the only people attracted to you are the people that you just didn't like that much and thought were a bad fit for you. Absolutely. There will be other people in this lifetime that connect with you, that like you, that are interested in you. But it does come down to luck. And being in the right place at the right time, coming across people that you really connect with and could see something with, it's okay and even a good thing that you have not met many of those people at this point yet. You're 27, so you're only a year younger than me. We're babies. Like, we're actually babies. I talk about this all the time with my friends where I'm like, anybody that gets married, well, okay, this is what I used to say. I used to say that anybody who gets married under the age of 30 is a child bride, and I do believe that. But as I'm getting closer to 30, I'm like, no, actually, the number might get higher for me. Anyone who gets married under the age of 35 is a child bride. You're only allowed to get married and have kids once it becomes a geriatric pregnancy, actually. If you're experiencing pregnancy before the geriatric age, which is like, what, 35, which is crazy, by the way. If you are getting married and having kids before the age of 35, you're a child bride. That's my take on this. I'm also someone who doesn't want kids, so ignore me, okay? Understand that my perspective is one of my own, my own life experience. Listen, you came to my sleepover and asked for my opinions, so here they are. Point being, though, like, we're in our 20s. Like, we are still in our 20s. I could meet someone tomorrow and still be with them for over a decade before I turned 40. Like, that's crazy. Do you even understand where I was 8 years ago? I am a different goddamn fucking person than who I was 5 to 8 years ago. 8 years ago, I was 20, okay? It was demon hours for me. Anyone that I've had a crush on in the last 5 years, I don't feel embarrassed of. Huge. Huge. Anyone I've had a crush on in the last 5 years, I would recommend to another person, even though it didn't work out. Huge, okay? 5 years ago, I couldn't say that. When I look at what my life was like 5 years ago to now, it is like night and fucking day. It's a totally different life. So imagining 5 years from now, when I'm 33, I can imagine a life that looks totally fucking different than the one I'm living now. I have no idea what's going to happen or when I'm going to meet the right person for me. But what I'm not going to do is rush into something that doesn't feel right because I have accepted this like fake timeline inside my head of when I should find the right person for me and what's normal versus what's not normal. I'm not going to let any of that get to me because I want the right thing, not a thing. So I'm not going to let this pressure of randomized fucking timelines stress me out. We're literally in our 20s. We'll figure it out. You will find the right person for you. Do not worry about it. You sound like you're killing it, that you have a rich internal life and you're slaying. So I wouldn't worry about it. You just kind of got to let life run its course, let life surprise you, and accept that one of these days it will come down to luck and you will be in the right place at the right time. You will cross paths with someone who lights up your entire goddamn world and the rest will be history. And until then, like, let's just enjoy the ride. Why rush it? Why stress? It'll all be okay. Hi, Maddie. Hope this message finds you cozy and soaking up the autumn vibes. You made it through another torturous summer. Yay. So true. I've been loving your podcast for years now. I have a very specific question, so unsure if it's worthy to feature on the pod. Oh, and guess what? I deemed that it was. I have visited New York City very briefly, but have only ever lived in very nature-friendly countries throughout my life. So I've often used nature as a date spot. And now that I'm married to my partner, we really enjoy witnessing nature together. It's like this sense of wonder for the world that we try to maintain in each other. Noticing birdsong, wind in trees, changes in the seas patterns. For context, we live in New Zealand, but we're both from other countries. Do you also feel that outward observation of the world is a way to bond with a significant other? If yes, how would this translate in a dominantly urban space like New York City? Do you ever feel like everything's super public and noisy / overstimulating, or do small cafes, secret spots in the city kind of take care of the wonder / romance of wandering and witnessing together? P.S. Talk to me like an alien who has literally never lived in a remotely big city. I love hearing about your passion for New York, and I'm always curious about more details on your experience there. Happy 10 years. Thank you so much. So, I mean, as you guys know, I think that New York is the best place on planet fucking Earth. Every time I leave the city on vacation, I am more excited coming home than I am when I'm traveling to the new destination. I think New York is the best place in the world. And it's interesting that you ask about, you know, how... and it's interesting that you ask, do you also feel that outward observation of the world is a way to bond with a significant other? Is it possible to have that in a more urban place like New York City? And I actually feel like New York is one of the best places for this. And I think, well, so many things. I'll talk about my favorite things to witness and observe in New York first. But like, I've gone on so many park dates in my time, or even just going on walks with people that I'm dating, whether it's like we're actually going on a walk together, or we're just like bouncing around to different bars and walking around together. But often when I go on park dates or walking around with someone that I'm dating, like, the people watching in New York is unbeatable. I can't tell you how many times I've been sitting on a park bench with someone I'm dating and we're having like a bunch of little conversations about the people that we're seeing. Somebody is, you know, running around Maria Hernandez Park in a circle. It's like one lap around the park is like a mile or half mile or something. I don't know. I don't remember. Do I look like someone who's ran a mile around a Maria Hernandez before? Like, no, I don't know. Okay, but there's some there's some amount of loops you can do around Maria Hernandez where it equals a mile. And I've sat on benches in Maria Hernandez with dates before where people will run past over and over again. It'll be like, okay, what kind of music do you think that person is listening to right now? Like, what is their vibe? What kind of playlist do you think that they're curating? You see another couple on a date and you're like, how long do you think they've known each other? Do you think this is a first date, or do you think this is like they've been together for years kind of situation? And you get to sit and talk with each other, not necessarily in observation of nature, but in observation of the people that are all around you, which honestly, for me, that's like part of the spice of life. And living in New York, I know so often people are like, oh my God, there's so many people there. Like, you're just surrounded by all this noise and chaos and whatever. And it's like, I think it's so beautiful to be surrounded by life and to be able to choose to opt in and opt out of it. Like, I'm a more introverted person, but I love New York. And I love New York as an introverted person because there's so much to observe that I am not required to be a part of. Even like living in an apartment building, living alone in an apartment building. I love being close by to so many people, having people that if something happened and I scream at the top of my lungs right now, someone would probably come knock on my door. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not alone in the sense that like there are people around if God forbid anything happens. And I can choose to go converse with my neighbors. I can walk down the street and meet my friends at a coffee shop, but it's like a low level of lift between me and the community around me. I have this pocket of peace, my alone in the city, which is my apartment, but I can walk two steps down the hallway and suddenly I'm in community. I can walk 5 minutes down the road and suddenly I'm hanging out with my friends. I love being in close quarters and having pockets of solitude within something so tight knit. You know, there's something beautiful about that to me, not having to drive a car or go super far to be with my friends. I am around community all the time. And I love that. And that's part of what makes dating fun too, because I feel like I am existing in like a little village just on my block. You know what I mean? Like, I've dated people from all over New York City, but I do feel like I often end up dating people who live in Bushwick. Because it's nice to date people who live in your neighborhood and you can sort of walk to each other and hang out at the same places. And I think that's something that if you don't live in a city, you can't even fathom what the experience of dating someone within your neighborhood is like. Like, even looking at the town I grew up in, which like the idea of dating someone whose house I could walk to is like unfathomable. Like, there was a handful of people whose houses I could walk to, someone on my cul-de-sac. You know what I mean? I can think about it, but it was like, okay, my option is like two people. But two options of people that I could date that I could walk to the house of, like, it just is not that many versus the amount of people who live in my neighborhood that are single that I could go on dates with and could be interested in is so many, like thousands of people. And I think there's something beautiful about that too, like how the close proximity of how we live in New York impacts the ways that we date and what dating looks like. You know, being able to walk 2 minutes down the road to the person I'm dating's apartment or meet them in the morning for coffee before work. It's very easy. It's very low lift. We get to sort of connect in that way as well through being observers of other people and also just in exploring our neighborhood and like direct community together because we exist within the same one. And honestly, the noise in New York doesn't bother me. I'm sure you guys can hear listening to the podcast. I do try to stop talking if they do drive by, but often there are sirens that come by and usually I'll stop talking and let them go. But sometimes you might even hear a horn in the background of the show, definitely in the background of my YouTube videos. When you're here for so long, you honestly stop noticing it. But to me, there's also something kind of magical about hearing the world happen around me all the time. I like being able to hear my neighbors. I like being able to hear somebody have a loud conversation on the sidewalk, on the street. You know, I like feeling like I am really entrenched in something bigger than me. I like feeling like there is life happening around me at all times. Even as I'm sitting having this conversation, I can hear cars whooshing back and forth on the street beneath me. I've heard my neighbors close their doors and walk down the hallway. I like feeling like there is life happening around me. And that, to me, is really like the big draw in New York City and something that I would connect with in the person that I'm dating. The people, the life, the cultures, the things you can explore that have been brought here by people. I think that the nature part of New York is something that people bring up all the time. Where they're like, I don't know how you could live in a place like New York where there's like no trees. And it's like, Number one, New York City has some of the most beautiful parks ever. If you've never been to Central Park, if you've never been to Prospect Park, like, there are a lot of beautiful parks. And there's also the smaller parks, Maria Hernandez and Bushwick. I can't say that Maria Hernandez is the most beautiful park on earth, but it is a park that I do go to and frequent because it's in my neighborhood. And there are trees there, and there is patches of grass, and there is, you know, basketball courts and little soccer fields and a dog run and whatever. There's green spaces all over New York, but I get that some people want to, you know, be entrenched in trees all the time. But we've got tree-lined streets. There are greener spaces in New York. If that's like your thing, I can understand why you might not be totally thrilled with how much of a city the city is. But honestly, like, I feel like I get the nature parts of New York City. When I want to go experience the parks and be around green, I can. But more often than not, what I want to do is be around people and to try a new restaurant, go to a new wine bar, go shop this artist pop-up that's going on, go to a comedy show, go to a Broadway show, go to a trivia night. Like, the things that I love about my life in New York are the things that are deeply rooted in people, culture, and the sharing of that with people that I love and the people that I'm dating. New York is just such a rich, culturally diverse city. There's so much life to experience here and to witness and learn about. That is the thing you are witnessing and watching in a place like New York, over like the crashing of waves or bird song or anything like that. It's the people and the dances and rituals and routines of the people who live around you. That's kind of the beauty of living in such a densely populated place. With that, I'm going to throw it on over to the post show, because we have something to discuss that I want to be just a big bitch about, because it was raging me out about it. If you've seen the conversation happening online about a certain big podcaster talking about how condoms are not it, yeah, I'm going to lose my mind about it on the post show. So if you'd like to go listen to me talk my shit, come join us on the Patreon. We'd love to see you over there. If not, I will see you in next week's episode. Mwah. Love ya.